Hello, I'm Katie Piper, and welcome to my podcast, Katie Piper's Extraordinary People. Each episode, I'll meet an amazing person with an incredible story who faced adversity and came through the other side to inspire others. Mother Pucker, had to say that carefully, slowly, aka Anna Whitehouse. She's joining me today in the studio, and I don't really know where to start. She's a writer, she's a broadcaster, columnist, advises the government, and has almost a quarter of a million followers across her social channels. She's also the founder of Flex Appeal, which is a campaign that pushes flexible working for all. So, funny thing is, I'm sat opposite Mother Pucker, which is what I know you as.
And got to say it quite carefully.
Yeah.
Especially the doctor's surgery when they're like, so what do you do? I work on a blog. Oh, what's it called? Mother Pucker. Pucker.
Well, I was even like really shocked to see your name, Anna Whitehouse, in print. And I was like, well, yeah,
who
obviously
is that?
She does have a name. Yeah. You could tell I live my life on Instagram, basically.
Oh, my God. I've become less lurker and more like active commenter now.
Oh, really?
Yeah,
okay,
yeah.
I'm trying to.
I was sort of lurking on the sidelines for a while, but now, yeah. I mean, I've been lurking in your profile for years, Katie.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, that's interesting.
Really creepily, okay. With the two eyes.
You touched on explaining what you do at the doctors, and it's always something I dread on forms with a tiny box that says occupation. How do you describe what you do? Because you do so many different roles.
Yeah, well, I think the Americans call it a multi-hyphenate.
Right.
I think the Brits call it a slashy, a little bit of this, a little bit of that.
I kept saying slasher, but that's doing a wee, isn't it?
or murdering.
Oh, right. Yeah. Yeah.
Having a waz or killing people. So I own that multi-hyphenate, really. Writer, campaigner, author, broadcaster. And I don't mean that in a kind of, wow, you do all these things. I do little bits of all those things that make up one big whole. And I think that's it's kind of owning the hyphenate.
Yeah, and they all kind of complement one another as well, don't they? They're all in that similar vein.
Yeah, exactly. It's like I'm allowed to talk about our campaign Flex Appeal, which is around flexible working on the radio. Mm-hmm. So that amplifies that. I'm wanging on Instagram about how difficult it is to work in a sort of childcare system that doesn't work with us.
Yeah.
So they all kind of come together. And there's times where I'm just on Insta stories trying on a really badly fitting Anne Summers corset. And I don't think that comes in the hyphenate.
So when you originally joined Instagram, I joined in 2012. When did you join?
Oh, I think it was just before you, 2011.
Right, okay.
Yeah, I think 2011.
What was your original kind of purpose? What did you use the platform for?
Well, a friend of mine said, oh, you should get on Instagram because it's quite a good place to sort of meet people. I was a new mum. I didn't really know anyone. All my friends hadn't had kids. And she said it was like a little bit like Netmums meets Tinder with fewer willy pics. And I was sort of like, okay. And I remember my first post was, I'd read this, I think it was the Fry Yay post.
Yeah, yeah.
But it was on a Saturday.
Oh, right.
So, you know, you look back and you're like, I had no idea what I was doing. But I did meet some great people. It saved me having to sort of go into the playground and sort of sidle up to mums going, hey.
Yeah.
So yeah, that was my original purpose was, I suppose, connection.
Mm-hmm. And it grew and grew. I mean, you're one of the most, you know, when I became a mum, I discovered you, and you are one of the sort of most well-known bloggers on Instagram for mums. And, you know, I recognise the name Mother Pucker everywhere I go. Everyone knows who you are. There isn't a mum that doesn't know who you are, basically. I mean, with
hopefully
that,
the government knows. That's, well, yeah. That's who we're getting to.
But with that, is it huge responsibility in that you are accessible in a way that we wouldn't have been a long time ago?
I think you've kind of touched on it in the past. We're in this world of instant connection, and it can feel quite disconnected at times. I think that's the bit I struggle with the most is where Mother Pucker took off was when I quit my job. Mm-hmm. And I'd been putting up really dodgy posts, well, not willy pics or anything, but I've been putting up really dodgy posts about, you know, flat lays and avocado toast, and I didn't really know what my purpose was there until I couldn't make my job work.
What
as a mother
job?
So I was a senior copywriter at the L'Oreal group, and they're great. I didn't leave because it wasn't worth it. They're great. And I still work for them, you know.
Right.
It certainly wasn't a case of like, you're a terrible employer, but my flexible working request was denied because of a fear it would open the floodgates to everyone else. Mm-hmm. And I saw
how many children did you have at this
point? I had one and was trying to get pregnant with a second. And I'd had a few miscarriages around that. And I just thought, I need a little bit of flexibility so I'm not running like the gauntlet every day to try and pick up my daughter. And I felt the stress of it all just wasn't working.
And it's a contradiction, because when you're trying to get pregnant, you're told not to get stressed.
And then you're like, yeah, really stressed.
Yeah, absolutely. The very act of it is so stressful. You know, I don't mean the sex, but it's quite stressful sometimes.
You know, whatever works. And I remember the point where I quit was when I was sat on one of those tiny primary coloured chairs at nursery and told off for being 12 minutes late.
I think I would have cried.
I that was the point where I broke down. I was charged £1 a minute as well after six, and I was like, it's not me. I'd said sorry 20 times on that journey, and I was like, it's not me, I'm not sorry, the system's broken. And that was when I went from avocado toast to I quit today. I don't think the working world is set up for anyone with caring responsibilities, anyone living with disabilities, anyone living with anxiety. Mm-hmm. Actually, you know what? Anyone who just wants to live. And that's when I posted anger and frustration. I had like 63 followers, including...
But that's still very brave.
But it was... I think it was, I want to just say the things that are going on. And I think my auntie Janet unfollowed me at that point. Ooh, I much preferred the avocado toast. So to answer your question, that's where it started. That's in terms of, and anything that comes from Mother Pucker, or I'm sure you have the same online, any negativity, any frustration, if I feel there's anything bad coming from it, I go back to that post. Mm. That was where I started. That was the anger and frustration that allows everything else to just fall away, because that needs, for me, I want that to be fixed for my daughters. Mm-hmm. I don't want them to have this big oak door slammed in their face when they come to have a child. I want to make sure that I've maybe opened that, even if just a little bit of light's coming in.
So you became really passionate and you became very honest, because it's not easy for anyone, but particularly women, to talk about the reality of these kind of situations. Were you faced with people saying me too and supporting you, or were you challenged? What was the response?
Yeah, I think while you and I have done have very different points, I'm sure it was the same as when you started standing up and saying, hey, I'm here.
Yeah.
You know, and it's not necessarily going, you know, you all have to listen to me and do it my way. Mm-hmm. It's like I've tried to become almost a translucent, sounds really creepy, but so that people could put themselves in what I was saying. Mm-hmm. That was it. I wasn't speaking just for my experience. This was for as many people as I possibly could, and it had to be inclusive. And so any criticism I've had, and I have had criticism, you know, that I am a privileged middle class white woman.
But that's not relevant to what you're trying to do. That doesn't matter, does it?
But it is if I'm not opening the conversation up to shift workers, if I'm not opening the conversation up to those working 0 hours. That, and actually that was where it's not criticism, it's learning. And that took a while for me to work out, because you feel a bit like, oh God, don't throw things at me. But actually I've had some of my best insights and changes to Flex Appeal from my biggest critics, and they've now become friends.
Right. Oh, that's interesting. So you've taken this campaign to the government, you work alongside the government now, is that right?
Yes. I mean, they probably would think differently. I've been described like a thorn in the side of
that's
the government.
That's a good thing, though.
Which is a good thing. And we work closely with them, but I'm putting a post up today where their latest consultation around flexible working, I'm criticising it, saying it doesn't go far enough, but it's a step in the right direction. So we work... Yeah, I wouldn't say alongside, but we're going in the same direction whilst challenging each other,
right.
Which, is good.
And that's how you get anything done and get any change made, is actually by being a thorn in somebody's side. You know,
have you been a thorn? Whose side have you been a thorn in?
Yeah, I suppose quite a few people, in terms of NHS, medical people, lobbying, campaigning for change in treatment. And, you know, it's a bit of an overused word now, but beauty standards and perception and what we get used to regularly seeing and the judgments that we make and the opinions we have. And I mean, in that sector, I have seen a change. I mean, in the last 5 years, have you seen a change, do you think, in the areas that you're campaigning?
I think the great, and I'm sure you, again, we both kind of came into this world at a point where we had a point to make and we didn't feel that we were being heard or represented. And I think that's the great thing, regardless of all the weird willy picks that are slipping into my DMs.
I don't get any.
Do you not?
No.
I had one only this morning.
I just get people asking me for money and that's it.
I don't know what I prefer. What you don't want is someone asking you for money while slipping the dick pic.
Well, yeah, that's dangerous territory.
Okay, it's bad territory.
That's illegal.
But I think the change has been, whilst we're lobbying for governmental change, whilst we're lobbying for employers to offer flexible working by default instead of us like arguing it from an employee perspective, the change has been in the confidence of the women and men that we speak to.
So the confidence to ask for what's theirs.
To ask for flexible working, to feel like, oh no, we shouldn't have this owner and pet mentality, you know, where simply the David and Goliath sort of setup where you've got an employer just going, sit at your seat and keep it warm for, you know, as long as you possibly can. I mean, that's not good for business. And I don't know about you before you sort of got into this world, but if you've ever been in an office where, you know, you have to be in at 9 a.m. And I'll never forget, like, the difference between somebody comes in at, like, 8:59 a.m., good employee, well done. Yeah. Somebody comes in at 9:01 a.m., bad employee, you know, and you start, you know, looking at codes of conduct and emails, passive-aggressive or just aggressive emails from employers. And you're like, nobody's looked at the human reasons before that. Leaves on the line, child screaming at nursery saying, "Mummy, don't go." Nobody's looked at the anxiety of somebody not feeling they can get on the tube or somebody who's 97-year-old grandmother is ill and they had to go via there to the office. No one looks at anything other than, okay, 8:59 a.m. good, 9:01 a.m. bad.
It's like dehumanising somebody, isn't it? Like they don't have a life outside work or they're not entitled to a life outside work.
It's dehumanising and infantilising. We're not children. Trust Katie. Get on with her job. And she will let you know if there's any issues around that. But why? I remember emailing my boss, going into deep gynecological detail about why I had to leave to go to an appointment.
That's crazy.
You know,
isn't
you're
it?
Like, yeah. You know, I mean, I think I might have.
And you're trying to justify.
You're trying to justify why.
That's a bit like an abusive relationship.
It is.
You shouldn't really be. It's weird because I think until you have something life changing, like giving birth, maybe being affected by some kind of disease or sickness, you don't really question, am I living to work? Am I working to live? What's the point of it all? You know, and actually making somebody else better off at the sacrifice of your own family, your own mental health. And it's funny, I mean, I'd be interested to know actually what you think about the saying of women can have it all. Because to me, I don't like the saying because I don't think it's true. And if you pretend you have it all, it's everyone else is kept happy. And then it's always you sort of drowning behind the scenes because you can't have it all. It's so difficult.
But you can have something. And that, I think, is where we need to change the narrative. Is nope, don't want it all. Put that aside. But I do want something.
Yeah.
And just because I've had children doesn't mean that something, whether it's a career, whether it is staying at home with your children, whatever your choice is, and I think choice is the key word. What is your choice? I'm not trying to shame people into going back to work after they've had kids. Not that at all. Whatever your choice is, but at the moment, my choice was to continue working and I couldn't make that work because of the current system. So I think, yes, I don't want it all. Absolutely not. leave that to someone else.
Yeah.
But it sets you up for a fall, I think.
Since J&K Security Solutions opened in 1987, our attention to detail and customer service have been our strongest assets. I'm President Jeffrey Beckman. We'll always do our best to find the most efficient and cost-effective solution to every job we tackle. Whether it's security for your home or business, installing video surveillance, or being able to control your garage doors from your phone, we can help you feel empowered with simple and user-friendly technology. Let's work together to secure your home or business. JKSecurity.com.
Every day in America, 60 million packages are delivered. But we don't always know what's inside.
He bent down to pick the package up. That's when the device detonated.
Danger is everywhere, and no one is safe in Austin, Texas, as law enforcement hunts a serial bomber for 19 days. From Sony Music Entertainment, Campside Media, and Pegalo Pictures, this is Witnessed. 19 days. Subscribe on Apple Podcasts to binge all episodes or listen weekly wherever you get your podcasts.
I never, ever take for granted that actually, usually, if there is something like Sports Day, because I'm freelance, I work for myself, I can book Sports Day off and I can attend it. Not always, because sometimes there are things that you can't cancel or rearrange. So sometimes I think, God, I'm so fortunate to be freelance. It's so much easier. I've got two children. But actually, sometimes it's even harder because you have to work really hard to get rebooked, to keep those clients happy. Sometimes you have to go above and beyond. You have to do a lot more socialising with people to keep your network.
And it's not pretty, you can't predict it often.
Yeah, like, absolutely.
You know, sometimes, you know, the early, I'm sure you get this a lot less, but sometimes you get called up the night before because mm-hmm. somebody's pulled out and yeah. you know, you need,
and
you
it's
need
a good slot and you need to fill
slot.
It.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, for me, I'm 35, two kids. I'm a bit of a bore now. And after jobs, everyone wants to go for wine. Realistically, I can't think of anything worse. I need to get home with no bra on, you know, watching telly and eating food.
What are you watching at the moment?
Well, I was, oh God, it's so trashy. I'm actually loving Gemma Collins' reality show because I like...
The GC?
Yeah. I like really mindless telly.
Did
that
you
I don't
see the
have
thing
about
Thrush?
Yes. I'm loving the Thrush. She scratched her crutch and made someone smell her Thrush.
It's a bit, what was the word, not claggy, what were the word claggy's awful, sorry, I can't remember what she said. Oh, it's starchy.
That was it, the yeast, yeah.
Yeasty. Oh, it's a bit yeasty, isn't it? I was like, oh God, GC.
But I know it's not highbrow telly, but my daytime job is sometimes going to visit people in intensive care, trying to discuss grants to give to patients at the charity, you know, who's more deserving, whose injuries are more life-changing, and it can be really heavy days. And, you know, my reading list is often quite heavy books because people will give me books who I've worked with, who've gone through life-changing trauma. And I just don't want to continue that when I'm at home. You know, yeah. I just want to sit there and not think and laugh and snort and, you know, chat to my husband and not bring all that sad stuff home to my home, you know?
Yeah, no, I think that's it. You need that that place, that mm-hmm. breathing space. Because I think if you don't, especially in an online world where you can go home and then immediately... connect back in with the social world, which is your job as well.
Yeah, yeah.
You so can't get
you
away
can't switch
from it.
Off. No. Yeah, it's hard. Yeah.
No.
You've been really open about lots of things, which have helped so many people. And you touched earlier at the start of the recording about having miscarriages. And when I was researching you, I mean, I have been stalking you for years as well. So
mutually lurking.
Yeah, I didn't really need to do much research. But I know... whilst you are open about some things, your miscarriages weren't something you were able to talk about immediately, which is completely understandable. You know, how did you get to a place where you were able to share some of it to help people in a positive way?
I think it came down to where the two worlds kind of collided, where and it's something trying to think, who was it off the one show? Alex Jones.
Oh yeah.
Alex Jones spoke about it recently, where she was miscarrying on a job mm-hmm. at work. And
which is quite common for
which
women.
Which is really common.
Yeah.
And that was the point where I just thought, actually, I'm talking about the human nature of business. Like, how are we humans mm. in this hulking great kind of, I don't know, this hulking great machine? We're just little cogs, but actually we need to remove ourselves from that and humanize it. And so it's what Alex Jones said, really, was I was the same. I was miscarrying at my desk. I was sort of 11 weeks and I didn't want to tell my employer for fear that they'd think I was trying.
Yeah, because then you'd be out the door.
Then yep. I'd be out the door. And all this kind of cycle of neuroses of my career being stunted came flooding in and I sat there just bleeding at my desk thinking, this is the only option. And that was when I thought, actually, no man would go through this. Mm-hmm. So that's when I thought, this is relevant to the conversation. Mm. This is relevant to flexible working. This is relevant to maternity discrimination, because it's not always about once you've had the child, it's also trying to get there. Mm-hmm. And I think the other side of it was I've tried to bring lightness sometimes in the dark, and it was an awful, I would say, comedy of terrors almost, where I was losing a baby when I was with my 3-year-old at nursery, and I was sort of at this nursery with all the noises and the and I was there and she was in the toilet with me, and it was just this absolutely nightmarish setup, and I didn't really know what to do, and I was crying, and my 3-year-old said, "Mama, why are you crying the black tears?"
You know, you've got your mascara.
Mascara's like running down your face.
It wasn't waterproof that day.
I was sort of like, oh, and I thought, I've got to be honest. Like,
yeah.
I want to speak to her. She knew I was pregnant. Mm-hmm. So I said,
How many months were you then?
So I was 18 weeks.
Right, okay.
So it was a very difficult time. Mm-hmm. And I said, sometimes for no fault of a mummy, a baby sometimes doesn't stay in. And she said, oh, okay, can the doctor put another one in? And
I was like, innocence.
And they start questioning. And I said, I'd have to talk to Papa about that. I don't think he'd be very happy with that.
Yeah.
And then she kept going and she said, can the next one be black?
Oh,
and
I was like, this is
God,
random.
I don't really know where I'm going here. Like my friend Zion, I really like Zion. And the questioning kept going to the point where it was such innocent questioning and so bonkers that I couldn't help but see a bit of lightness in that, in the honesty of that exchange. And I thought she'd forgotten about it until almost 2 weeks ago when I was picking something up. And she said, was that what happened when the baby fell out of your tummy? Because she knows, like, when
so
you...
So that stayed in her
and
mind.
And I was like, oh, God, they're little adults trapped in small bodies.
Yeah.
And I think, you know, it's not right for everyone, but it felt right in having that communication, opening it up, and also linking it to work. Mm. And that we shouldn't be Alex Jones going to work whilst miscarrying. We shouldn't be Anna Whitehouse sitting at her desk miscarrying for fear it will affect her career in saying something.
And it's great with your daughter because you're installing from an early age that as women, we shouldn't dress things up and brush them under the carpet for other people's benefit to kind of appease them. You know, you're telling her the facts of what's happening. You know, I had the same in my house. My daughter will talk to me about my appearance and she'll ask me how it happened. And I will let her lead the conversation and I will say, well, I was burnt when I was younger. And then I leave it at that. And then if she says, how are you burnt? I always say, well, I was attacked. And some people do evil things in the world, but there's not many people like that, you know.
And how does she take it?
She's like your daughter. She carries on asking, you know. And so, and in the end, it is a comedy fest because she's like, what's all those lumps and wrinkles around your eyes? I was like, well, there is.
Mummy, why are you so fat as well? Just at the end of it, you know,
literally,
you're through
so
it. And you're
funny.
Like, oh, God.
And I'm like, well, it's scars, it's skin grafts, it's a bit of aging. She's like, oh, it looks awful. I'm like, well, no, it doesn't. It's your opinion. No, it does. It looks really bad. and in the end, it is quite funny, but it's an open, honest conversation because, you know, I don't want her to find the truth out when she's 9 from somebody else who doesn't know the facts, you know, and I don't want her to feel like she was patronised or kept in the dark. And it's real life, you know, but like you said, it's not for everybody.
And it's your story. You're her mother.
Mm.
It is not, I think life is not something to, like you say, sweep under the carpet. When you go to work, I think this is this thing we talk about a lot. When Katie Piper goes to work, you bring your whole self to work.
Mm-hmm.
There isn't one side of who you are that I don't feel in everything I've seen you do that doesn't come across as you, the whole you. There's no hiding from anything. If anything, you've given a space, like I said earlier, I don't know whether the transparent example is the right thing, but you've given a place for other people to put themselves. And I can imagine that when you were asking earlier, the weight of that can become quite a lot, which is why you need Gemma Collins.
Yeah, exactly.
And her thrushy fanny.
Yeah. Sorry. It's so true.
It is the light and the dark. And I think if you can stand up and speak, it gives other people confidence, I think, to do the same and have those conversations with their children as well.
Yeah. No, I think there's such an old-fashioned culture of dumbing yourself down for people or dumbing situations down. I mean, it's like a British saying of, you know, oh, I'm fine when everything's absolutely catastrophic. You know, it's a weird... But I suppose everything you're doing is about saying actually the reality of it. You know, I remember I was quite naive when I had my first child and I was freelance when I had my first child. And, you know, my sister has a one child and two stepchildren, and she's employed. And, you know, we looked at nurseries, and it's like, it's not even worth going back to work for some people.
No, you pay to go back to work.
And it's insane. And then the guilt of, you know, when I go to work, I always feel guilty. And then in the past, I would financially justify it to myself. Oh, well, I'm earning good money, so even though I'm missing this, it's okay. And then if I was doing stuff for charity and voluntary, I was like, oh, well, I'm not earning money, so it's okay. But this is fulfillment, and I want them, the girls, to do this when they grow up. And in the end, like, I don't have to justify any of it. It doesn't matter if I'm getting paid a pound or thousands of pounds. I'm going to work because that's what I've chosen to do.
Yeah.
You know? And it was like, I'm never present anywhere. I'm never present at home. I'm never present at work because I'm in this weird cycle. And when I saw about your campaign and what you were doing, I was like, brilliant, because it's bloody brave to stand there and say all this stuff that before you, no one's really said it. You're the first person.
Well, it's exactly what you've just said, is that our work and lives should ebb and flow. I don't feel like, you know, and I'm not saying don't work 9 to 5. A lot of people have criticised me saying, but I blimmin' love 9 to 5. I want the structure. Great, that's your choice. But it might not work like it didn't for me. I needed to come in 15 minutes earlier and leave 15 minutes earlier, and that was a no. And that would have changed my life. It would have changed my working life. It would have changed my child's life. And that's not much. So I think it's, and it's trying to get away from this being a female issue. I think that's the thing. The women should have it all. The women are the ones that need flexibility. No, we need flexibility.
Well, yeah, there's people men missing out on their children's, you know, those vital years, those baby years, and they're missing out on all these great moments.
And they want to parent. Like, my husband, you know, wipes as much baby arse as I do. You
oh, does he?
Like,
that's good.
He does,
that's
just to get it on her file there. Yeah, he does. And I heard the other day from a guy who said, I asked to go and pick up my daughter from nursery a couple of days a week. And my boss's response was, well, can't your missus do that?
Oh, that infuriates me
And
so
he
much.
Was like, well, when, you know, her boss pays, when you pay me as much as her boss pays her, then we can talk.
That's brave of him, though.
Yeah,
he's not,
I mean, it's nothing to do
ego.
With money. It shouldn't be about money. But ultimately, it was interesting, you know, this archaic layer at the top that's stopping people from working in a way that isn't just good for humans, but is good for business. That's the bit. The UK economy would be like £156 million richer if all businesses came on board with flexible working. I'm not campaigning for people. I'm campaigning for businesses.
Yeah.
And that's the bit that often gets missed. They're like, oh, what's this mummy doing shouting on the streets going to government?
It's and so much more than that.
It's for you. I want you to earn more money, and I want you to have a more productive workforce. That's why I'm doing it. And that's what we're trying to do. And I think coming back to our daughters, I often go into Parliament. I'm often lobbying outside Parliament. I'm in big meetings with lots of grey suits. And I bring my daughter along often. Even if they haven't said it's okay.
Yeah.
She's part of me. She wants to know what's going on with the world.
And how old is she now?
She's 6.
Does she behave then?
Yeah, she loves it. And she loves asking questions afterwards. But I go in like a, you know, floral monkey jumpsuit.
Yeah, love
Whereas
that.
5 years ago when I started out, I felt I should sort of suit up.
Dress
I should
corporate, yeah.
I should fit in. And actually, again, with what you've done that I think has inspired so many is, no, this is me. I'm going to turn up as me. I go to Parliament. I'm wearing the jumpsuit. This is who I am. And at that point, my daughter, when I was interviewing Helen Whateley, the MP who's brought the flexible working bill to Parliament on our behalf, my daughter was like, why are there so many boys here? And I was like, you see it from a six-year-old's perspective. There are lots of boys. And Helen Whateley and I were there sitting in the foyer in our kind of in floral regalia to her roses amongst many thorns. But I love seeing the world, as I'm sure you do, through a six-year-old's eyes, because they ask questions that we've become used to not questioning.
Perhaps the questions we should be asking very loudly and often. For people that are listening to this and... You know, sometimes you listen to a podcast and you feel like the person's basically talking about you. It speaks to you. This is you. And they're feeling empowered by your words. But they might possibly take the headphones out when it finishes and not act upon it. You know, you can want to make that break. You can want to make that next step. But it's hard. You know, what should those people do? How can they break free from those chains?
I think the two things are, the first one, this is not a mummy wants to see her more of her Weetabix smattered child issue.
One wants more of that.
No one wants. I don't want to be scraping that Weetabix off her tables anymore.
I was
anymore.
Doing that this morning, but yeah.
Empower your partners, your husbands, your brothers, the men in your life. Challenge your dad if he's at the top of a company that's pushing against flexible working. Empower yourself with information and change people's mindsets around you, because it starts there. Don't think it's down to one person to change the working world. It's down to all of us. If you see a woman coming back from maternity leave, buddy her up with somebody else who's returned from maternity leave. Mm-hmm. Support each other. If you are doing a maternity cover and the boss there says, oh yeah, well, you know, would you like to stay?
Question the dreaded thing.
If in that moment that woman who you've been covering for is being pushed out of the workforce. Mm-hmm. You know, we say women supporting women over and over again. It means nothing on a T-shirt. It means something in that moment.
Yeah.
And men supporting men. I think men's flexible working requests are twice as likely to be refused than women's.
Yeah.
Don't be the guy that says, can't your missus do that?
Mm-hmm.
Be the guy that says, yes. Like, stop saying the words man up.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
just man.
Infuriating.
Man, woman, parent.
Yeah.
I think using
person.
The word parent, person,
yeah.
Instead of woman, man. It's like humans in the workforce. And I think it's about businesses seeing that this is about putting humans above business, but for business benefit.
Mm.
Stop seeing me as a thorn in your side and start seeing me as, I was going to say, fertilizer. I don't want to be seen as fertilizer.
I like that analogy.
But yeah, I'm not the thorn. I'm the fertilizer.
Yeah.
Help me help your business grow. That's it.
It's weird because for me, I mean, I guess it's different regional to London, but for me, the people I employ, so through my charity, it makes sense for us not to have an office because that's a massive overhead. It makes sense for us to have people going to members clubs, meeting rooms, working from home, laptops, devices. We use a lot of video conference calling. We've all got kids. We all live in different areas. Lots of people volunteer and they're trustees and they might be up north and don't want to come down south. So we have always worked like that, actually, because it's better for business, less expenditure, and we communicate more regularly. It's much more, you know, when we're having creative meetings, it's more inspiring and we're just all different people doing different things, particularly the people that are volunteers. They've got a whole separate career, so we've got to be sensitive to their time. So for me to pay a monthly fee for an office and make people traipse in on public transport every single day and be there is like suicide for the entire organisation.
Yeah, it doesn't work.
Yeah.
It really doesn't work. And I think, you know, they talk about the rat race.
Yeah.
Why do we want to be rats in that race? You can still run the race. You know, you just don't be the rat.
Yeah.
No one wants to be the rat.
That's a good strap line. No one wants to be the rat.
Don't be the rat.
So if we do want to support your campaign,
yep.
I mean, we can go onto your Instagram and repost you.
You can repost. You can sign the Equality and Human Rights Commission's Working Forward Pledge, which we've aligned with. So you can put... It's a charter to prevent maternity discrimination in the workforce, to promote flexible working for men and women,
mm-hmm.
and to encourage an inclusive and diverse workforce. That's the focus of it.
Okay.
Loads of big companies have signed up, like Shell, BT, BP,
Brilliant.
Ford. So this isn't a small, like a few small
yeah.
businesses have signed up. It's big news.
Mm-hmm.
That will then send a very big message to the rest of your company that you're committed mm-hmm. to change. Follow us. We are campaigning with Helen Whateley, the MP.
Right.
So any support you can give us around getting our 10-minute flexible working bill in through Parliament, that would be huge
mm-hmm.
for us. And then in the interim, like I said, just keep the conversation going.
Be that person.
Let's talk about flex, baby.
Yeah.
when you're on the PAYE.
Yeah.
Let's talk about all the good things and the bad things of productivity.
Oh, you've been amazing. Thank you so much for coming on. You're crazy busy. You're going straight to your gig on a radio show, aren't
yeah,
you?
Yeah, on Heart.
Yeah. No. We'll listen. I've got to listen to you in the car.
Tune on in.
But thank you so much for all your chat about flexing, grubby fannies and fertiliser. It's been great.
It's been emotional.
Thanks for listening to Katie Piper's Extraordinary People. If you haven't already, please subscribe wherever you get your podcasts. If you enjoyed this, please help us spread the word. Rate and review the show where you got this, or share on socials. I've been given some great advice in my life, so I wanted to share that with you in my new book, Things I'd Tell My Child. My book follows my journey into motherhood, but it also shares stories from my own mum and the experiences that she's had, the highs and the lows. This book was quite difficult for me to write in many ways, and my mum's comments were particularly emotional for me to read. But above all, I hope that you enjoy reading this very special book, Katie Piper, Things I Tell My Child.
Life can be a bit of a handful.
But what do you do?
Let go?
Or grab on to everything it has to offer?
Ask yourself, do you back down when things get tough?
Or confront them, breasts on?
Do you give up or give it hell?
Do you ignore your amazing boobs or fearlessly check them regularly?
We thought so.
This is Grabbin' Life by the Boobs.
So grab regularly and check out any changes.
It could save your life.
Search Copperfield. Grab life.